You're listening to the Product Podcast from Product School, featuring the best product leaders from Silicon Valley and beyond. If you're an aspiring product manager looking for your first PM role, or an experienced PM looking to level up your skills and advance your career, visit productschool.com to learn about our certifications and how we'll get you there. Want to see how users experience your website or app? FullStory's award-winning platform gathers data on user experiences in real time, allowing product teams to better understand issues and successes in aggregate. Get started at FullStory.com. In this episode, we're joined by Zalando product leader, Gopika EM, to talk about B2B product management. If you're looking to gain the essential skills required to excel in this space, keep listening to learn just what it takes.
Hey everyone, my name is Gopika, and today I'll be speaking about how to be a B2B product manager. Before I jump straight into the topic, let me give you a very quick overview into my background. So I'm originally from India. I've lived, studied, and worked across Italy, the United States, Spain, and Berlin, Germany, where I'm currently based out of. I've built products for companies such as Zalando, Wayfair, Festo, Hungry, and PopXO. And my background is primarily in business. I studied a master's in innovation and entrepreneurship at ESADE Business and Law School in Barcelona. So let's jump straight into the topic, which is how to be a B2B product manager. Over the next minutes or hours, we'll be covering a few main topics that fall within how to become a B2B product manager. Firstly, I'll take you through the differences between B2B and B2C product management, the essential skills that is required to exceed or be successful in a role such as this. And lastly, I'll take you through some of the common pitfalls that's more common, in my opinion, in B2B product management as well. So this talk is for someone who either wants to move from B2C product management to more B2B, as well as someone who's completely new to the field of product and wants to get their hands dirty in this field. So let's look at this image first, which basically is the same whether you're building products for B2C or B2B. You have a vision, you have the strategy that you need to apply to achieve that vision. And lastly, you have a product manager trying to navigate through all the possible ways to reach that vision. So no matter what the sector, we use the same tools and frameworks to build and ship products. So we all follow the 4D processes as though it's the Bible. We use many such frameworks such as Amazon's Thinking Backwards framework to communicate, discuss, and gain alignment. And lastly, we keep users at the center of all our decision making. And although there is a massive overlap between these two kinds of product management, few areas have a much higher focus, depending on whether you're building for businesses or for end customers. So let's jump straight into the first subtopic, which is the key differences between B2B and B2C. So as mentioned, the underlying process of building or working with both these kinds of products is largely the same. But based on my experience, I have noticed some key differences between when you build products for businesses or customers. One of the main areas that I've seen this difference lie in, firstly, is in the way that we build personas. So in B2B and B2C, personas are designed a little differently from each other. In B2C, you must focus on the person as an individual. So you look at things like age, gender, income, hobbies, etc., and how they spend their time, where they're located, and so on. Whereas in B2B, it's more about the organization and the company. So you look at things like for how long has this company been established? What are the capabilities of this company? What's the department size? What products are they specialized in? Are they a single product brand, a multi-product brand, and so on? And especially for B2B, the end user and the consumer is quite different from the buyer. So it actually gets tricky. You're building for someone who might not actually pay for the product. It's someone else. So it actually requires a lot more conscious effort to build up empathy with customers and users in the B2B space. The second main difference that I've seen between these two types of product management is in the product experience. So for consumer products, success is typically measured about getting users to love your product. But when you look at an enterprise setting, the buyer and the user, as I mentioned, is different personas. So for enterprise products, success is about enabling your end users to deliver more value to their business by using your product. I've also noticed in B2B setting, improving workflow efficiency is far more important than just better user experience. And almost always, building new features takes priority over improving existing user experience. And lastly, I've seen something that's quite unique in the B2B setting is your strong relationship with the sales team. So we all know that one of product managers' main job is to gain alignment with multiple stakeholders. But in the B2B setting, one of your key stakeholders as a product manager is to really be very much aligned with what with the sales team. So consumer products rely on marketing and advertising and word of mouth. And B2B, the main tool is the salespeople. So they need to think about us as PMs, need to think about the sales team as just another customer. So if the sales team is, say, going to make more money, we need to think about how we can help them achieve that goal. We also need to make sure the value proposition that we're building for is the same thing that the sales team is communicating to the end users while they're selling it. And as product managers, one of the main things you need to do in order to better this relationship with the sales team is to understand the sales process, understand how leads are generated and move through the pipeline, and also understand this valuable information that the sales teams are getting from the end users since they're in such direct contact with them. So it's definitely one of the really important points or important things to note while working in a B2B setting, in a B2B setting, that you will notice this stakeholder being far more, like has a far more weight than your other stakeholders. So now that we've spoken about the key differences between products in a B2B and a B2C setting, let's jump straight into the key skills required to excel in this role. The first one is understanding your user base. And while it sounds very, very simple and straightforward, as you can recall, in a B2B setting, you're not learning about a person, but about a business. So you need to learn and cohort users based on different aspects of how they run the business. So let me give you an example here. At one of the companies that I was working at, we were developing a supplier tooling product for brands that are selling on our platform. So one of the ways that we use to segment our users is by the resources they have. And the reason When I say resources, it means their internal capabilities, and we segmented companies based on the internal capabilities. And the reason is because we didn't want to deliver a product that's beyond their capabilities. So we didn't want to deliver a product that's nice to look at, but it's not helpful when put to use, because the end users didn't have the knowledge or the know-how to use the specific product. So you can take other ways to cohort your product or your users. So one is through revenue. You can also look at their organizational structure. How is their organization team, how's their org structure divided? Is it based on, are people focusing on specific countries? Are people focusing on specific categories? Because these insights will help you deliver and build your product even better, because you will design your product based on their business structures. So understanding and really segmenting your user base is quite actually one of the most important factors in a B2B setting. So let's move on to the second main skill that's required for a PM to excel in a B2B setting. So usually in the B2C case, the intersection that a product manager works in is the intersection of business, engineering, user experience, research, and so on. But in a B2B case, especially if you're working with a data or a dashboard product, what's really necessary is to have this domain knowledge about data and data science. Let's take an example. So let's imagine you're building a dashboard product that depicts the performance of a customer's business through interactive visualization. Sounds easy, right? You just have a few numbers, a chart. You don't really need much. But what a PM needs to know is that it's not just about the data and some building a chart, but you need to understand the close proximity between design and data infrastructure. So the way you design and visualize a chart or a table dictates how the infrastructure is built, whether you need a single table, multiple tables, how are the interactions between the tables, and so on. So a PM in this field needs to have a deep appreciation for what is possible and what will soon be possible if they were to take the full advantage of the flow of data. If you're building, and this is specifically for someone building a data product, you need to know and learn that building products with data also requires a data strategy. And this is above what a business strategy is. So a data strategy is the way and your plan that you develop to understand how data is generated, how data can be used to improve the product, and also use this in your products, and also use data to improve your product's long-term success. So in other words, a data product manager or a product manager working with data and dashboard products makes decisions that get the flywheel moving with data. While you don't need to understand the nitty-gritty details and technicalities, what is helpful in a really collaborative discussion with your back-end engineers or data engineers is to learn and know the know-how of what kind of infrastructure is required to support the product and what is the complexity and costs associated with scaling the data. And yes, data scientists or engineers will always be around to answer your questions. But again, in order to be an active participant in these discussions, and to also understand the trade-offs you make by making one decision involving data versus the other, learning about the infrastructure and learning about the trade-offs will help you develop better in this role. So that's the second most important and critical skill that a product manager in this field needs to have. Lastly, it is, as we mentioned right at the beginning of this talk, about the relationship with the sales team. So that's one skill that a product manager working in the B2B space needs to really work towards improving. As I mentioned, the sales team is literally the most invaluable source of information, since, and this is the sales, this is your account managers, anyone who is in direct contact with the partners or with your end users can really help you understand their needs and their problems. And they can also help you in highlighting what you could build next. So something that a product manager in this field should not fall prey to is just building things that come across in these feedbacks. So there could be multiple times where key account manager or someone from the commercial teams can tell you that, hey, why don't you build this? It might add value to our user. And I think what's a skill that a product manager needs to have is to understand, is not to build something as and when they come in the form of feedback, but actually learn about the underlying problem that the current product is currently not solving, and then decide whether a scalable solution is required to answer these unaddressed problems. And that's the reason, especially with when you're interacting with the sales team or commercial teams, there needs to be not only the sort of exchange, but also prioritization and a deeper and a second level of research that needs to be taken up after these discussions, because a lot of these conversations might be in the form of a solution and not a problem. And that's where a product manager needs to dive deep into and learn about the problems instead of going straight ahead into solution mode.
Want to see how users actually experience your website or app? FullStory's award-winning platform gathers extensive data on each user experience in real time, giving product teams hundreds of ways to better understand both issues and successes in aggregate. Plus, with individual user sessions, FullStory enables you to drill down into the details, giving you a better understanding of each unique experience happening on your website or app. Get started at FullStory.com.
Lastly is something that I just touched upon, but I want to go deeper into it, which is prioritization and expectation management, which comes also with having business and enterprise customers and working with the sales team. So something that might come about in a B2B setting is you can get requests from both the sales team as well as your existing customers. While this is also true for B2C products, the key difference again is that B2B products have fewer customers, and there could be a chance where these few customers actually generate a lot of revenue and have a lot of weight in what you build. So something that you need to understand is, yes, these specific customers may have more weight than your other customers in terms of the revenue they make, or the relationship that they have with your team. But something that you also need to know is weigh this against what you're building. So is what you're building specific to that one customer? You also need to think, if you customize your product heavily to that one customer, how can this product scale to the other customers that are using your tool or your product? So it is a key challenge for product managers in the B2B context to navigate this fine line between keeping your customers happy, generating enough revenue, and building features that are scalable to all users or most users to your product. Secondly, what I want to touch upon is expectation management. So something that is very, very noticeable in a B2B setting is that your sales team wants to have a high-level visibility on your, or want to have a lot of visibility into your roadmap. So we do know that roadmap is something that changes quarterly or 6 months, but sometimes the sales and even the end customers want to understand what you're building and are you building for things that are being requested for. So I think what we need to navigate as a product manager is this line between enough visibility for customers and sales team, and also the flexibility to be able to deliver the highest value product and killing those ideas that fail to deliver the value on the other hand. So you need to somehow make and constantly communicate with your end customers and your sales team by every time there is a change in your roadmap, every time you do go a different direction, communication is key to manage the stakeholders' expectation. So that's one of the key skills that a product manager needs to develop in this working in this sector or in this segment. So now, lastly, it brings us to our last segment, which is the common pitfalls that a product manager in this setting falls to. And while this is very much true for also B2C products, the reason why I've highlighted in this B2B space is because it costs you more. So if you fall to one of these problems, and if you fall prey to one of these problems, you're not only losing customers, or you're not only losing the few handful customers that you have, but you're also spending resources that you may or may not have in order to build these. So let's move on to the first one, which is aimless exploration. So what I've highlighted here is, in the beginning, I took you through how there are a million paths that a product manager can take to get to the vision. But what could happen is you don't know where to begin, especially if it's a new product, especially if it's a new feature. So sometimes what product managers end up doing is just they just take up random discovery. So you just go ahead and say that I'm going to interview a bunch of users or partners and see what comes up in the discussion and take it from there. So that's one of the common pitfalls that I've noticed in this field. Something that, and let's make this more concrete through an example. So let's say you want to, or your goal as your product vision is to increase revenue streams through advertising. And what I've seen product managers do is just go out there, interview your users and understand how can we generate revenue through advertising. There are a bunch of different ideas that the PMs want to test, and it has no purpose and it has no clear direction on how much or how likely is this idea going to contribute to achieving this vision. So what's the solution to that? So the solution to that is, instead of wandering aimlessly, you need to wander with purpose. And what that means is, before you jump straight into solutions and before you jump straight into discovery, you need to break this higher vision down into themes. So what you're now doing is saying, yes, my products and vision is to generate revenue through advertising. And instead of aimlessly going forward and testing and throwing a bunch of ideas to your users, what you can do is first segment them based on themes and then select a theme that you want to validate and discover further in. So in this case, what we've done is instead of looking at a bunch of ideas, we are now saying, hey, yes, we can generate revenue through advertising, through data-driven insights, through alerts, or through recommendations. And now how you're going to start your discovery work and your research work is by picking one theme and then moving that forward in the discovery stage. So you know that you're moving with a specific goal in mind, with a specific theme in mind, and you're not, like, all the noise is canceled out. Something that you can do even better is not only choose a theme and validate and test a theme, but combine it with personas in order to be even more, to wander even more with purpose. So what we've done here is that we're saying that, let's take this example. We're saying that we want to understand how can insights contribute to generating advertising revenue. And we believe that there are certain types of personas that will help us generate this revenue if they did use insights. So then during your interview process and your discovery process, you specifically look at this target group and validate this problem with that target group before going and building something. So what this does is it strengthens your discovery work and your eventual 4D work. And you're not wandering aimlessly. You're not wasting resources trying to find an idea that might work, but you're putting, you're developing a framework. You are segmenting the bigger idea into smaller chunks that you want to test and then testing it with the relevant user group. So that's one way to solve this. Let's move on to the second problem that I have noticed is it's a sunk cost illusion. So it mostly happens when you have shipped a product without great traction, but you continue building on it because you think that by building or making it nicer or prettier, the product that's not working, you might gain more customers or you might improve the engagement and so on. The solution to this is it's very simple. It's basically slowing down. What that means is instead of going and sending out additional emails, communication emails to your users, instead of improving the UI, UX, or just building complementary features that you think might improve the product, what you need to do is ask yourself some devilishly simple questions. And these are mostly, what is your value proposition of the product? What is the problem you're trying to solve? Who is it that you're trying to solve the problem for? How are your end users currently solving this problem? So especially for this question, you would know that if your current business users are not doing much to really solve the problem, it might not be a real problem. Versus if your end users are stitching together a bunch of things and trying to make it work for them, you know that this is a problem to solve because they take a lot of time and energy during their day to make it make it work for them. So there are these certain questions that you need to ask yourself, which is the basic questions, before you go and build further upon the feature that you've delivered. And if you then do find out the answers, and if you do believe that you're not building for a certain target group, or if you're not building the right product, what you need to do is pivot instead of moving even further down the product development process. So let's move on to the last common pitfall, which is biases. So what this means is a bias is basically misinterpreting or skewing the signals for validation. So let's take this example here. This is a real life example. So at one of the companies that I was working at, we were tracking the engagement and the activation rate of the different users that were using our product. I got so excited by active users that I ignored the remaining users. So what I did was looked at active users, constantly looked at the growth in revenue that they were generating, how often they were coming back. And what I didn't see is this chunk of users or this cohort of users that were actually going, that were actually declining in engagement and in adoption. I spotted this at the right time. And when I tried to figure out how to solve a problem such as this, I realized or I learned that cohorting is one of the best ways to solve this problem. So what you do in by cohorting is instead of asking yourself what's going well, you ask yourself what's declining. So when you look at graphs such as this, you see the yellow spots and you ask yourself what's going there, and you go further into it. So let me give you a more concrete example. So let's say you have 100 users and 50 of those users are underperforming. What you do is then segment these users into cohorts, such as when was the first time they logged into the tool? Secondly, how much revenue are they generating? Third, the third point, do they have any internal capabilities? So when you segment these users into different segments, what you then do is spot the segment that's declining. So then you can approach those specific users. Let's say the user that's generating less than a certain amount of revenue and do not have more than two employees at their company is causing the decline. So what you then do is approach those users for a post rollout feedback and dig deeper into what is not helping them. So what are the things that would provide them value that you're not providing them value with? So that's one of the best ways to not fall into bias, is to consistently question what's not going well. Then go deeper into that problem. The second way to not fall into this bias or the survivorship bias is by considering product management as a team sport. And this was actually one of the best advices that was given to me by a mentor. And I was told that if you do consider product manager as a team sport and not something that you do at an individual level, you take self-worth and the idea that's originally one element, and you split them into two. So you decouple self-worth and idea. So if an idea fails, it's not just you that led to its failure. It's a bunch of people. So you wouldn't fall prey to cognitive biases or survivorship biases. So involve as many people as you can in the ideation phase, in the validation phase, in the feedback phase. And that's one way to not to detach self-worth and the idea. So I guess that was a little intro or a little package to getting started into B2B product management and something that you can expect by going into this field. I hope that it helped you gain an insight into this area, and Yes, thank you all for tuning in, and I'm happy to answer any questions either via LinkedIn. So thank you and have a great rest of the week.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to us if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Taking the time to write just a few sentences about what you love most about the show will help us improve it and reach even more product people around the world. And when you're done, why not reward yourself with some free product management content and resources over at productschool.com? Until next time, stay product-led.